Welcome to Hallway Transgressions. I'm Chris.
I'm Ryan.
We are two private school alumni, and this podcast serves to examine the worldviews of Christian pastors and teachers through a postmodern lens. Content warning, this episode contains explicit, blatant transphobia and homophobia. Please listen at your own risk. Some content may be alarming to listeners. Trigger warning, this episode discusses topics that may be controversial, offensive, or triggering in nature to some individuals. Listen at your own risk. Hey Ryan, what's your bright spot?
All right, so I think last time I said my bright spot was that we got the cat's harnesses, which I don't know if we got dog harnesses before we got the new ones. They fit way better than the dog harnesses we got. But now the new thing that we got just came in today was two backpacks to carry the cats in. So now we're going to be able to put them into their own little backpacks, take them on a hike somewhere or something, and then let them outside, like sit down somewhere probably. And then put them on their leashes and let them out and see if they want to explore or just chill. They were outside cats at one point, so we didn't want them to be completely indoor. So we wanted a way for them to be able to go outside. So we're excited to get them used to the backpack so we can take them out.
Is it backpacks that you wear?
Yeah, so it's a backpack that we would wear that is like a carrier. So the cat goes inside of the backpack and it has like venting things and whatnot. It has like a Sherpa-lined floor piece. And yeah, so, and then they can be like, there's like a little string that you can attach and hook them to the backpack so they can't like jump out and escape.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we tried putting them in there. Nezuko was fine with it. She was chilling. I was walking around the apartment with her in a backpack and she was fine. Kiri, on the other hand, was not having it. She was just kind of crying the whole time. So now we're doing the same thing we did with their normal carriers where I have the backpacks just by their carriers and I'm putting their food into the backpacks now. So I'll put them in there and they'll associate being inside the backpacks with good things such as eating. Yeah, so hopefully they'll enjoy that and we'll get to have adventuring cats. We'll find out. So anyways, what is your bright spot?
You know, my bright spot is, well, last week I cut my finger open and that was great. Well, this week I didn't do that. And also, you know, I was just really excited to do this podcast and get it ready to go. So actually seeing it on real podcast feeds is super cool and super great. I'm just really happy that the response has been super good for our five listeners. And yeah, just happy to being able to do this.
Yeah, our few listeners seem to be excited for another episode.
Yeah, they seem to be excited for this specific episode.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, I also wanted to say that last time I said that bullying works, and I just wanted to clarify that I don't condone bullying.
Yeah, me neither. Bullying's stupid.
It was just a really specific joke from a different podcast, and we're just going to leave it at that. Anyway.
Before we get started with this podcast specifically, I want to just, you know, ahead of time apologize for me and Chris having to be the ones to represent the LGBTQ plus community. Speaking for myself at least, I am a cisgender straight white man. I really am not in a like the best place to be a representative for this. I want to be an ally. I want to do what I can. But again, I am still ignorant on a lot of these things. So I just want to apologize for anything that me or Chris gets wrong in this podcast. We're trying to do our best, but we know that impact can be different than intent. So we apologize.
Yeah, same for me. Please reach out if we get anything wrong. We'd love to correct anything at all. Like, we're still learning as we go, of course. So please reach out if you have any comments or concerns.
And with that, let us begin.
So we're skipping ahead from in season three. We're skipping to the episode that dropped on April 18th, season three, episode 17. The title, From Zero Prep to a Major Conversation, Same-Sex Attraction and Gender Identity. Their description for this episode is, the guys were a little behind on show prep this week, but they end up discussing a massively important topic, same-sex attraction and gender identity. They touch on logic and rationale, social and emotional factors, and the Christian response. Don't miss this one. Yeah, and we sure didn't miss it. What was your first reaction when you saw this in your feed, Ryan?
I thought it was going to be interesting to hear what they had to say. I didn't know. I really didn't know what it was going to be, but I knew it probably wasn't going to be good.
Yeah. I think my first reaction when I read it was just pure dread and just internal just pain.
Yeah. I didn't write any notes for the previous episode, and I've got, what, 3 for this one? So it's a doozy.
It took me, I don't know, it's one of their longer episodes at about 50 minutes long, and it took me about 3 days to get all the way through. I mean, it was just painful for me. It was very frustrating. They have an attitude of knowing. They seem to be very confident in their position of, I mean, obviously not too much of a spoiler, but they are very transphobic and very homophobic, and they seem very confident in their understanding of gender dysphoria and same-sex attraction, and I mean really just the LGBTQ plus community in general. And it was a lot of, it just felt really a very cocky attitude to me.
Oh yeah, and what gets me the most is the like pity that's behind them. It's not all just we know what we're talking about, but it's like they pity people that in quotes struggle with that. Like the whole time is like feigned care, that like they really just care about these people, and that's why they do and say the things they do. And it's just rough. We'll get to specifics eventually later in this episode.
Let's start out at the beginning. So I was surprised in this episode they really jumped into their topic very early. I feel like most of their episodes, they spend a couple, like maybe 10 minutes out of a 30-minute episode just catching up. And
yeah, they start with the, what sounds like there was some like talk before they started recording because they made some sort of pregnancy joke. Like that's how it starts. Like Slowfur's back. Are you like pregnant with energy? I don't know what the context was of that, of such a joke.
Slowfur, how are you hanging in there? Are you vibrant right now? Are you pregnant with energy?
I'm not pregnant with I guess if we're using that phraseology, I have delivered.
Yeah, and then they go on to, D likes to complain that he can't say pregnant woman anymore. It's pregnant person, because we wouldn't want to assume anything.
We're in the days of, pregnant, you can't say pregnant woman, it's pregnant person. So,
yes,
yep, that's right. We don't want to assume anything.
Right. That's right.
Oh, it's just so passive. Yeah. It's just, that's the very beginning of the episode is with that. And you just know.
Really turn it up to 100 there.
It's just rude.
They have a basic misunderstanding of the situations that, like, the situation of ungendering language is just where it's, the left is trying to create more of a safe space for everyone.
Just, yeah, safe space for everyone, because we've got people that really want their dichotomy, their two boxes to put everyone in. And then there's reality, which is just everyone's similar to each other. And it's not like there's guys and girls, like people really want to have these separations when really I feel like there's just such a wide mix. Like people like to use the term spectrum for a lot of things. I don't know if there's a better term, but just in reality, I just see people as people. There are women that are manlier than certain men and whatnot, like based on our like gender stereotypes. Like if we just got rid of that, then everyone just see everyone as similar to themselves, not as like how they're different. Like we really want to differentiate, and I don't get it.
Call people women if you know them and that's how they identify. Like we're not, like it's not trying to remove the concept of a man and a woman from language. It's just removing it from official language so everyone feels included. And it's really insulting to just make such a casual, callous joke like 3 minutes into a podcast.
Yep.
But it really just, I guess, sets everything else up for the rest of this episode.
Sure does. So it starts with Luke Johnson talking about YouTube kids, which leads to Slowfur talking about teachers and whatnot.
he is kind of vague about it, but it has to do with I don't even know, because it's so vague, and like there's a lot of problems with YouTube Kids. It's kind of funny because there's a ton of problems with YouTube Kids, and they just pick like something that's such a non-issue to go after, and it's really weird.
They just don't like the idea of educating kids about gender identity. Cause that's, here's a specific quote that got me really good. At around like 3 minutes and 15 seconds, Luke Johnson goes, quote, "It's infuriating when you mess with kids. I don't like that," unquote. And the thing is, I think that's why we started this podcast, because we don't like when they mess with kids. Like, it's just funny because that's what I think about their podcast as well. It's like, you guys are messing with kids.
Yeah, because their main audience, I mean, after looking through their podcast description, I haven't listened to all the episodes, but a lot of the questions come from students and just graduated students. So their audience is made up of people they teach daily. And that's what's so concerning to me. This is like a public representation and just a public record of what they teach in the classroom to these kids every day and how they interact with these kids and what their curriculum and what their inner thoughts are. And that's what concerns me so much, because it's so backwards and problematic and frustrating to hear. And I just really worry about the kids in Lakewood and graduating Lakewood as they enter, you know, real life. They leave the safe space of a Christian private school into what life is actually like, where you leave the good and evil binary of Lakewood and move into the gray that is normal life. Like, it's confusing and it's difficult, and like, I mean, it sticks with you for a long time. It's hard to get rid of, but once you do get rid of it, life is much better, in my opinion.
Yeah, I don't know if it can or if like I can actually get rid of everything. Like, there are just certain like postures I take towards situations that I don't consciously notice that was trained into me, or just like ideals and stuff. Like, there's a part of it that I would say was good and I can use, it's good, but there's a lot that I had to recognize and deal with and become aware of. It took a bit of work, and it was really just because I went to school for Bible and religion. I don't know how I would be different if I didn't do that.
Yeah, I feel like the few classmates I still talk to and hang out with, we all have kind of a similar story of like learning very quickly in school. I know mine was a Who Wrote the Bible class I took at IU that was like reading the Bible just as a literary device and not as a scripture, where it started to unravel and ask questions I've never asked before and start to view Christianity more as just one of a bunch of religions. The semester after that, I took a class about Judaism, Islam, and Christianity together. And I think there was a lot of added context and understanding that came from how these religions were created, like how similar they are. Their holy texts grew up together, really. Stuff like that was missing from my Lakewood education that added a lot more context to religion and Christianity specifically.
Right. I think like I felt like I was taught more how to respond to other people than to learn for myself what I believed. Like they that's later on, they talk about grooming, but I was being trained to be some little apologist, basically. Like, you need to be able to defend what you believe, but it's like, what if I don't know what I believe? It doesn't matter. Use these tactics.
Yeah, well, I think that's interesting, because technically 10th and 11th grade Bible was supposed to do that for you, but it was so much book work, and like the right answer was very specifically the Baptist view, that there wasn't any room to almost discover what you believe. It was more, just like you were saying, it was more like, I know how to answer this question based on the Baptist view of Christianity or the Baptist view of theology, versus I know how to answer this because this is what I think about God and how I believe in God. And it was structured in that way. Specifically, I'm arguably structured in that way so that you almost become Baptist, and then you take UTT, and then you become an apologist for this very specific view of Christianity, right?
The kids' profiles on all of these platforms, and there was a tweet that linked to a video of of someone clicking on YouTube Kids and just all of this quote unquote education on the difference between sex and gender and how they're not always the same thing and they don't always line up. And, but it's like marketed towards kids. And, man, I tell you what, infuriating when you mess with kids. I don't like that.
Yeah. He doesn't use the word grooming in this part, I don't believe, but later he does for other things. But he's saying without saying that he thinks the left is grooming kids into thinking it's okay to be LGBTQ+, which, to be clear, it is totally fine for that to happen. It's who you are, and that's okay. Really, they're grooming kids, but anyway, whatever. So after talking about YouTube Kids for like maybe 30 seconds, Slofer jumps into some stuff he saw on notthebee.com. We talked about the Babylon Bee last episode. Arguably, we talked about that far too long. I had a lot to say. And so Not the Bee is their sister website run by the same people. So one of the creators and editors, Seth Dillon, has described the Not the Bee website as a humor-based entertainment site that offers commentary on stories that are so outrageous they should be satire but somehow aren't. It's a website where they let opinion editors talk shit about people center-left to far left and just generally just be assholes. They have the same three topics as the Babylon Bee. Most notably right now is just unbelievable amounts of transphobia and homophobia because of the quote-unquote don't say gay bill. We'll get to that in a second, but I just wanted to mention something first. So Slofer is talking about an article specifically in here. It's titled Transgender Teacher Tells Six-Year-Old Students About Transgenderism, Says Doctors Make a Guess About Whether a Baby is a Boy or a Girl, with the confused thinking face emoji. And so they're making fun of them thinking that this teacher is a biologist or doctor.
Like a teacher's aide and talking to second graders, you know, about saying, you know, he was transgender and then describing to them what it was and was saying things like, you know, sometimes the doctor, when you're born, looks at, you know, your physical makeup and your anatomy and guesses what you might be, but sometimes they get it wrong. Seriously.
I'm a doctor in medical school and I'm right. Just going to take a,
boy,
he's gonna take a guess at this here.
And this particular person speaking must have been a biologist, evidently, so to make such a call.
I think he was more saying that doctors assign a sex at birth, but it's more of like a guess at their gender and what their gender identity is going to be. And since the sex that was assigned at birth did not match his gender identity, he had to come out. Like he said, when he turned 18, he told everyone he was actually a boy because his gender identity was that he was a boy. And so the doctor guessed at that. That's how I understood it. And so then he came out that he was a boy and everyone treated him well. And he seemed to be happy, which is cool. It doesn't always work that way. Yeah, but I also was just going to say, like, they were making fun of the idea that doctors guess, and I just want to know what they think doctors do all day. Like, you go in, they'll see patients, they'll hear their symptoms, do some tests, and make an educated guess at what it is. Like, that's all doctors do, is make guesses. Why are they so, like, they got so defensive of doctors making guesses? Like, doctors are always right. Doctors went to medical school, so they know exactly what's happening in every single person. They wouldn't guess. They're doctors. Like, I think they need to lower their view of doctors. Like, they're people too. They went to school to be able to make educated guesses. Doctors can be wrong. I hope they know that. They should not just trust every doctor that they meet.
This is a really good explanation of being trans to give to first graders, actually. I like that a lot.
Oh, yeah. I thought he put it very well. Not that I would understand if it's good or bad, honestly. But to me, it was like a good explanation. Like, he used the whole imagery of like wearing an itchy sweater that keeps getting itchier and itchier.
Yeah.
I thought it was good. at least good for trying to simplify a very complex thing that people, like adults, are still trying to understand.
It's hard to understand because it's nothing most of us has ever experienced before. And yeah, the analogy of the itchy sweater is, it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people are trying to understand or want to understand.
Yeah, that's true too. And that's not like a political ideology thing a lot of the times too.
It's distance. It's like, this has nothing to do with my life. I'm not gonna try to understand it.
Yeah, yeah. Or like, you're not even a part of our culture. I mean, I know on the left it happens a lot where it's like, what is it? Trans exclusionary feminist, where it's being left leaning, but still not accepting that people can be trans. And it's very annoying and it's toxic no matter where it happens. And it's not okay. Just let people live how they want to live. Well, why is this so difficult?
All right. We made it about 6 minutes into the podcast.
Yeah, it's been, yeah. Oh my God. I didn't realize that this article just straight up misgenders.
Yeah, the whole time they use she and her and like this woman. It's really rude and just insensitive. Like, try to at least act like you're trying to understand where these people are coming from instead of thinking you already know. So Slofer attributes it to Peter Heck, but in my experience with reading those articles, Peter Heck was a little bit better. Like, he was still rough, but this dude that has that in the article is Joel Abbott. And he is just terrible.
Yeah. Well, that just shows, I mean, it, like, I'm really glad I laid the baseline in the last episode about these people that write for the Babylon Bee and not the Bee. And I'm assuming their social media. I'm scared to even look at that. They've been kicked off on and off all their social media for misinformation. So take from that what you will. But so they made their own. I'm very scared to see their users over there. Especially after reading your book reviews last time. But like, just, it's insulting that these writers who just do not care about the people they're writing about and just so inflammatory. And so there's no research. There's like the only, so they quote from the Daily Wire is the only other place they get any sort of semblance of research from. And it's just an echo chamber in of itself of being super transphobic about it and like just misunderstanding the whole situation. Like, this isn't even they talk about teaching kids about sex and like sexual perversion and sex acts, and like that's not even what any of this is. Like, this this first grade teacher is just explaining what it means to be trans in a very easy to understand way for kindergarteners through second graders can understand. And it's just enough information. You know, kids have short attention spans, so it's just long enough of an explanation to explain what's going on, make people who might feel the same way feel included in understanding, just give information all around to kids without explaining anything like perverted or whatever they talk about later.
Yeah.
So at 5 minutes and 20 seconds, Slofer also talks about teaching kids about sex and mentions as Peter Heck and some of his good writing and stuff like that.
Teaching about sex, because some of the dialogue actually dealt with literal sexual perversion, trying to say that this was, I mean, some of the stuff, it was just like, it was gross. It was embarrassing. And I couldn't believe it. I was floored when I saw this. I'm like, man, now I see why DeSantis and others are trying to do what they're doing. Yeah, I mean, it was unbelievable.
Right. I wanted to talk a little bit more about Florida HB 1557 and SB 1834, which is titled Parental Rights in Education. So the Florida House and the Florida Senate have both passed this bill, and Governor DeSantis has signed it into law. So it comes into effect July 1st, 2022, if it's not challenged in court and paused and held. We'll see. So the bill has three main pieces to it. The first is the school district is to ban the teaching of LGBTQ topics in the classroom. Schools are to not encourage discussions of sexual orientation and gender identity in primary grade levels or in a manner that is not age appropriate or developmentally appropriate for students, which I will add is very
subjective.
very broad of descriptions. It doesn't really limit that any more than saying that, just to keep it open enough for enforcement. And third, parents that feel their student was subjected to a discussion or educated about gender identity and sexual orientation have the right to take legal action and sue the school district for violating the bill. This is things we've seen before with the Abortion Act in Texas, just really giving people the ability to sue someone or something else, giving them a lot of legal backing for that situation, and just all in all, enforcing a limitation without actually enforcing it. It's kind of it goes around a couple legal protections in the law by doing it that way. For the abortion bills specifically, or the anti-abortion bill specifically, it gets around, if the government isn't enforcing it by having a person sue another person, then it gets around the legal precedent of Roe v. Wade and Casey, which is allowing abortions for now. And with this bill, it gives since the state isn't enforcing it, through the schools, it gives a little bit of a roundabout way of getting around the equal protection clauses in the Constitution. There was another part in this bill, an amendment added by Senator Joe Harding, a co-author in the bill, that if a student confides sexual orientation or gender identity to a school official, they must tell the parents within 6 weeks. This amendment was thrown out and it didn't pass, but I think it's important to mention this specific one because it shows the rhetoric of the politicians writing this bill and what they actually want. So some statistics that came out after this bill started debate. The Public Opinion Research Lab at the University of North Florida pulled a representative sample of 685 voters registered statewide and found 49% of the respondents opposed the legislation, 40% support it, either somewhat or strongly. Among Republicans, 44% strongly approve of the legislation, compared to 19% of registered Democrats. Men were more likely to feel that way than women, but only by 2 percentage points. More notably than gender, age appeared to be much of a stronger factor in these bills. Among the 55 to 64 year olds, support for this bill is the strongest, with 48% somewhat or strongly supporting the idea that teachers should not encourage these discussions. That contrasts strongly with those between the ages of 18 and 24. In that age group, the poll shows 35% of that age group strongly or somewhat approve of the legislation, and 51% somewhat or strongly disapprove, the poll shows. I think it's interesting bringing up these statistics and showing that a lot of the voters statewide, Florida, oppose the legislation, and yet it still passes. And support wanes drastically as you get lower into the voting age of 18 and 24, just showing as you get lower and lower into age brackets, the support for being inclusive and supportive of LGBTQ plus rights is stronger. So this bill is created to alienate students and more create an us versus them scenario to scare LGBTQ plus people. It also removes the safety barrier that students have at school from their home life and creates a scenario where a parent has the ability to exert more control over a child, basically treating children like they aren't human beings but property of the parents, as seems to be the trend recently.
So yeah, first of all, I want to mention how much they focus, they being the Lakewood Park podcast, they focus on physicality as being reality and mentality as being fiction. I get somewhat confused when, like, why are we weighing physicality more than someone's mentality? Like, how they think, like, that is all physical as well, like thoughts. Are chemical reactions going on in your brain? It's like everything that we're doing, like, I feel like they're making thoughts and like ideas and consciousness to be something not physical. It's something outside of our own like body, when I feel like all of that is still housed within the body. Like, that is all part of physicality, but they differentiate the two. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, they talk, I remember specifically them talking about naturalism, which I thought was very odd. And they seemed very confused at how someone could naturally, like, their body is physically what we consider male, but they feel like they're more of a woman, they're more female. And they didn't seem to understand how thinking works, or like how consciousness works, or how feelings work. They seem to like think that if you're a naturalist, in quotes, that you don't have thoughts. Like, I was really confused by that.
Yeah, I don't even have anything in that. I didn't even try to get into the whole naturalism thing. My thing is, like, they focus on what's easy. They're like, okay, this is something we can see. Like, they love the idea of being able to see something and being able to take truth from seeing something, right? So you see, the doctor sees the genitals of the baby and knows whether the baby is male or female. And that means that their gender identity must be boy or girl too. If not, they're delusional, is what they're basically saying. And so do they understand, like, the Lakewood should offer a hermeneutics course of some sort, or something like, think about interpretation. Yes, we can all see the same thing, the exact same thing. It is, you can say it is objective in that it is there, everyone sees it. Everyone's interpretation of that same thing, everyone looking at the same thing, all those interpretations can be different. That's where it gets subjective. Just because you can see a thing doesn't make, like, some your interpretation truth of that thing. And so I don't know why, like, just because they can't see these people's thoughts, like, they can't see a manifestation of their feelings, of who their sense of themselves, it must be delusional. And that's where I think modernism does some wrong here. Modernism is, I mean, in going through school, you can tell they love modernism. They hate postmodernism. Modernism being like this very logic-oriented scientific method of do this experiment this way, get results, trying to be objective. And not necessarily trying, but in modernism, I think they actually believe they can be objective. And postmodernism kind of goes in to say, like, hey, no, you can't really be objective. Everyone has their own bias and you cannot just get rid of that. That is ingrained into how you think. Like, you can't necessarily be objective. You can try, you can identify your biases, but there's still going to be bias in there. And so they really think just because they can see these things that it's obvious, and they just throw out someone's thoughts and self-images. That you must be what you look like. That is what I get from their perspective. And I disagree. I think how you see yourself internally, it has a much bigger effect on who you are and who you're going to be than how you physically look, or how you what your anatomy has. Like, why? I just get confused why they're so attached to, if you have a penis, you must be man, you must be godly man, you must fit into this role that we have assigned you, rather than be who you want to be who you are.
Well, I mean, even if you think about it, like, they have this weird concept just about specifically trans people, right? Like,
yeah,
people go to church wearing clothes that make them feel good. People go to school with clothes that make them feel good. It's not like any of the hosts go to school and stuff that, like, is unflattering, really. Like, they want to feel good when they go out. Like, they don't yell at their partners because they're wearing makeup going to church, and that's not natural. Like, people want to feel good in their bodies. So why is it, like, why is the line here? Like, why did you put it here? It's odd.
Yeah, it's really weird. I try to understand. I feel like I was at that point, but they really do. Most of the episode is focused on trans people and their issues with trans people. And so that's going to be the majority of this episode. They do bring in sexuality at some point, but in a bad way where they're, like, relating the two.
Mm-hmm.
Let's first of all say gender identity is different from sexual orientation. Those are two complete different topics. I think they just see, like, LGBTQ, like, the T is in there. It is in, like, this, like, sexuality domain in a sense, but it really doesn't have to do with sexual orientation. So first of all, like, we're going to try to cover the trans part, because that's mostly what they focus on through this episode.
Yeah.
But basically, I just see them taking the easy way out instead of trying to understand someone, they just look at their genitals and say what they are.
That's the content they consume. I mean, I can't say for all of them, but Slopher specifically, I know in other episodes he mentions the different writers, and I kind of know the content he consumes generally. But I mean, in this specific one, he brings up Joel Abbott and Peter Heck, and they are very anti-trans people, very reactionary opinion writers, and their opinions are, basically their opinions are shallow and unresearched, and it's the easy way out, and it's the same kind of attitude we get throughout this entire episode as well.
So Slopher goes on to talk about, I don't know if he was talking about a specific person he knew or just in general, but he talks about people who have transitioned and end up regretting it, and trying to use that as part of his argument for the why trans is bad.
I was reading articles of those who are coming forward now as being transgender, dealing with that and going through the therapy and the hormones and surgeries, and realizing that this was not what I was promised. This is not fulfilling me. This is not fixing what I was dealing with, and it's still there. But now I'm worse off. And very interesting to hear this particular individual. Well, there's a few on there that are interviewed on this clip I have.
He mentions people regretting transitioning, and yes, that can happen. That's why even like with surgeons, they should be pretty thorough in making sure that the person does have this dysphoria between their body and who and their gender identity, and whether it's going to benefit their lives. Like, they have different things that they do to try to decide, like, this is going to be better for this person. It's not just anyone who goes in being like, I want reassignment surgery. They're not just going to be like, okay, let's go do it right now. Like, it does go through a process. And yes, there are going to be people that eventually end up regretting it. And it does suck for them. Like, it's a big bummer. I don't know what to say about it, but I don't want to assume that there's like one correct way of doing things that applies to every single individual. Just because it wasn't the right choice for that specific person doesn't mean that it's not the right choice for everybody. It doesn't discount everyone. Like, it's a big generalization of like, oh, this person regretted it, so it's bad.
So yeah, he talks about this. I remember I looked into it a little bit. There's definitely people that have that regret transitioning. There's people that it didn't, it helped, but it didn't help fully, and they still have other issues. Doing reassignment surgery is a big deal. You go through stuff with a psychologist and therapist and the surgeon to make sure, like you said, there's a process, a big process. It's an important milestone that can happen. And it's sometimes for the majority of people that do transition, it's a life-changing event. They feel better with themselves. They are less suicidal. They're less, and so I looked into people who have regretted transitioning. There's definitely been people that have regretted. I don't want to limit their stories. It's important to hear those as well. But the 60 Minutes specifically, there was a couple of other news outlets. 60 Minutes specifically ran a piece about this a couple years ago, and it came out later that the journalist didn't actually talk to any of the people who transitioned. They talked to their parents, and in a lot of circumstances, the parents weren't supportive of the transition, and it didn't seem like the stories were all clear. It was very messy. And even then, even if we go through what Slopher is talking about, he almost generalizes it and makes it a bigger deal. He doesn't talk about any specific statistics or anything like that. The statistics vary a little bit. It's very confusing of a field. It's about maybe 8% of people who transition later might have possible regrets doing that, but the majority of people do. not have any regrets. They live better lives that way. I hate bringing up these statistics in a way that it almost dehumanizes. I'm trying not to dehumanize people, but like they just make it such a bigger, like the stuff a big deal. And like they always preach it as fact. And that's what gets me this whole episode. It's like they say these things and treat them as like fact without citing anything specifically besides something maybe they saw. And like there's just so much more nuance to it that I'm trying to bring out as well.
Yeah, that goes into, I think there's like, I'm getting to the end of Slofer's bit here. So he goes on to this thing of saying, he says, if the Bible is true and goes on.
True, you know, and then we do have a real God who created us on purpose and purposely made humanity to be two genders and for a function to be there. And, you know, I really do think a lot of what we're seeing is just flat out, you know, if we're rebelling against our creator and we're rebelling against the truth, then of course this is going to be a part of it to where we are rebelling against the very design of the gender binary system that he made within humanity.
He basically says that trans people are rebelling against the creator. And this is where I get really confused too, because he's probably only talking about trans people that transition, like that actually have the surgery, go on ERT, and change their bodies. I think that's specifically what he's talking about. And he lumps that as all trans people. I don't think that's necessarily correct though. But so he talks about trans people rebelling against the creator. And in that sense, it's like, are you just talking about because you have a surgery to change your body, or you do things that changes your body? Because we have so many different things that we use that is supposed to change our body or help our body, or like they might be against cosmetic surgery, but for some people that's probably the best choice because some way that their body was formed is causing them harm. And that's where I think they just get too focused on physical harm. It's like, oh yeah, it's causing them physical harm, so they should have a surgery so that they are physically well. What if their body is causing them mental harm? Like we just disregard mental harm at all. Like mental health is just not a thing. I did not hear anything about mental health going through Lakewood. And I'm hoping they're addressing that in some way now, but you can tell by the way that they talk that they are much more focused on physical well-being than mental well-being. It's like mental well-being doesn't matter. That's just something secondary. Your body is most important. Your mental health comes last. Do you get the same kind of vibe?
Yeah. Yeah, you put that really, really well. I get exactly that same vibe.
Yeah, so they're saying it's rebelling against the creator. And just because you're changing something from the way that you're born, does that make you rebelling against the creator if there is one? Like part of that creation is the mind, the part that is saying something's wrong. That is a part of the creation. Does the brain not matter? Does like the mind or the brain, does that matter at all in their perspective?
It depends if it's defending the faith or not, I think. And like it's kind of a joke, but kind of not at the same time. I mean, like, it's just another weird line in the sand being drawn for no reason. Like, we have so many amazing surgeries. Like was it me? What was I rebelling against the creator when I got my gallbladder removed because it was slowly killing me? Or like my tonsils and adenoids removed because I was getting tonsillitis every year, or like every 6 months, and my adenoids removed so I could breathe better. Like, I've had surgeries that are like removing and changing my body. I mean, that's what most surgeries are, I guess.
Yeah. And so you have also rebelled against the creator by changing the creation.
Yeah. And like, maybe Slofer needs to be more specific, but the way he mentions this in the podcast, the definition of what he thinks is rebelling against the creator is broad enough to include almost everybody who's had any sort of preventative surgery. And maybe even like, I remember a couple years ago, a man got something happened, some accident, and was able to get his face entirely reconstructed. So he got plastic surgery, which is plastic surgery is done on burn victims and things like that. Cosmetic surgery is using those techniques to improve and alter the body. I actually learned about that recently, so I'm very happy to know this knowledge now. But Like it was a miracle recovery, right? But under this definition, he would also be rebelling against the creator, really. Like, I just don't like this definition. I don't think it's right. And it's just another weird line drawn in some arbitrary sand, really.
Right. Which leads to the last thing that he had to say was him being, he didn't use the term androgynous, but he was upset about the people in ads not looking like a specific gender. Like, he was upset that even the ads are getting rid of gender.
You know, I'm scrolling through on my phone and just random advertisements that come up, some for UPS or whatever. And the person that they show, it's like intentionally almost like a gender neutral type person. I got one from Walmart that was showing a Barbie, and it was like a genderless type human, you know, and it's like trying to, it's like, wow, that's at the core of our rebellion, rebelling against him, even trying to erase.
Oh, no. So I said, now being androgynous is rebelling against God. Oh, brother. Like, come on. Like, just because people express that way, or like these companies are trying to be inclusive of everyone, like obviously they're a business, they're trying to get more clicks, and the way they're doing that is because people are more concerned with inclusivity.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're just trying to make the people in these ads more relatable, or at least include more of the population that's been left out for who knows how long, forever. Like, now you don't need to get upset about a category of people that dress in a non-gendered way. Like, I don't know if they even know about non-binary, but I don't think they'd be for non-binary people at all either. I think they'd find a problem with that too, even if it doesn't involve like surgery or anything. They just have a problem with someone not adhering to one of the two gender stereotypes that the patriarchal church has brought.
Yeah. Like, and even if we take the massive Ben Shapiro assumption that everything they say right now in this episode is true, and that being trans and changing is rebelling against God, it's a sin, all that stuff. If we take that all as true, the people in these ads don't have the same belief system as you. So why does it matter how they look? Why are you getting super upset about how someone else decides to present themselves to the world? Like, why does that even matter to you at all? Like, it doesn't. It really doesn't. And when you start to take a minority group and decide that they are sinning against God for being who they are, it's just entering really dangerous territory. Like, I just don't get it. I just don't get it.
Yeah, they don't get it either, though. We're all in the same boat here, guys. We all don't understand. So stop acting like you do. I try to, and who knows? But anyways, that's the end of Slofer's bit there at the beginning, which leads into Jed. So Jed had some ideas as well, which he goes in and talking about Genesis shows ideal creation. That was one of his first things. He goes, Genesis is what is showing ideal creation.
Because Genesis 1, it doesn't just talk about how creation is made. It also talks about, like, it shows the ideal form of creation. Like, it's like, this isn't just God creating. This is also showing what creation is meant to be. Creation at its height, creation at its peak.
And I was just going to say, one person's ideal is another person's hell. Like, first of all, it's not as easy, just because, like, this story adapted to, I shouldn't get into some of the history of it, but like Genesis, you can tell it's not like an original story that's in the Bible. It's been used in a lot of different areas, and it's written by people in a very old culture, a very misogynist, patriarchal culture that loved the same things, like this separation. And so just because that person's idea of creation and what ideal creation would be doesn't necessarily make it. I know that they believe in like the not inerrancy, but infallibility of the Bible. At that point, like, you're reading too much into a myth. like the specifics of that, I don't think are what matter as much. I don't think the storyteller was trying to say, hey, look at this. The whole point of the story is to show that this is a woman, this is a man, this is how they relate to each other type of thing. Like, but that's just one of the things. He does go into talking about, so I'm going to say, the ideology that is affirming of trans people. He claims that that is the new Gnosticism.
And this, it's like a new form of Gnosticism where it's saying, it's just kind of like, oh, who you are is something detached from your physicality, is something independent of what your physicality is.
It's a fun one. So he's saying that who someone is, their idea of who someone is detached from their physicality. Like he goes in, I don't know if he uses delusional there, but he does say that it's something that doesn't exist. Like that's who someone is. Their idea is not reality, that their physicality is who they are. And again, I just go into this whole like, so it's just someone's mentality does not matter. Like they're just so focused on this physicality of a person. Like I would say like what makes someone who they are is how they think. It just doesn't make sense. A body is part of who someone is. But I'd say what matters more is who they see themselves as. Maybe if people weren't so binary and didn't shove genders into boxes, people would be fine having a male body and feeling like a woman. But no, people treat men one way and women another. So the real problem isn't with their physicality, but with societal norms given from a history of patriarchal Christians. They are upset because people are not fitting a mold that was created by the church or just by past generations. And I'd like to think that with progress, we learn new things, we throw out some of the old dated things, and we get a newer understanding of them. Like growth, like I said last time, requires change. But like, I was talking with Natalie about it, just this idea of like, I wonder, this is just a hypothetical and who could even answer it. I wonder if anyone would have dysphoria if they were just allowed to exist and not treated how they looked, like didn't get a certain treatment based on what their body looked like. Like if people just allowed other people to exist without pushing on some sort of standard, like, oh, you look like a boy, you should act this way, you should dress this way, you should be this way. If people didn't do that, would there be any dysphoria between their self-image and their body? Like there, no one I think can answer that because that is an ideal world that's never going to exist. But I was just curious about that. Like, is it, I feel like society is one of the issues. Like our cultural norms, societal norms is what's making people within that community have dysphoria or feel bad about the body they were given. Like going back to that teacher's video, he talks about the doctor assigning him the sex of female, of being a girl. And what did his parents do? They immediately go dress him up in girl clothing, like we have girl clothing and guy clothing, like dress him up in girl clothing, put him in girl activities and whatnot. Like we have these, like these activities are for girls, these are for guys. And because of that, that probably caused his dysphoria to be worse. That is a big assumption. I will admit that. Mm-hmm. Like, but I just have a feeling that it is because people treat people a certain way based on how they look, that they are like, this is not the way I want to look. I want to be treated the way that I see myself, not the way that you see me. And I don't think people are going to be able to do that. That's just, again, I don't really have any expertise. Just a straight white man. As Bo Burnham puts it.
Hey, we like to paint our fingernails sometimes.
That's true. I did suggest that we paint our fingernails while we recorded this podcast. I thought that would have been funny. Paint your nails is not just for girls. Everyone can paint their nails if they want to. Let them.
If it makes you feel hot, go for it. Don't make it a big deal.
Unless you're going to like go overboard with how much you love them, then go for it. That's fine. I love when me and Natalie both have our nails painted and everyone just compliments mine, but ignores hers. It's just hilarious. Because no one's used to men having painted nails, at least not straight men.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. I like doing it. Makes me feel good.
Oh, it makes me feel like I can type amazingly. I just look good typing. Like I could be a hand model.
You can be whatever you want to choose to be, Ryan.
If I don't push down my cuticles before I do it, then they look a little like wrong, like off, like not long enough. Yeah, I have to push back my cuticles or else like it's more of like a rectangle where the short sides are, because from the tip of my finger to like the cuticle, that part is small. It doesn't look right with the width of it when I don't push back my cuticles and paint them. So yeah, that's a part of my routine. If I ever paint my nails, I gotta push back my cuticles before I paint.
I still can't paint between the lines, so we're still working on that.
Okay, so that was the whole new Gnosticism thing.
So I went to Harvest Fellowship 1 week with my parents, and it was one of the earlier times we went, as I was starting putting myself back together after deconstructing, and the pastor mentioned, he was talking something about how the Trinity started. I don't remember what verses he was talking about, somewhere in the New Testament, and he just really wanted to talk about the Trinity. And so he brought up a story of I don't have my notes here because this is just off the cuff, unfortunately. There was a early church leader who didn't believe in the Trinity, and other people were praying to show them the truth of like if this was real or not, if the Trinity was real or not, to give them a sign. And then the guy who didn't believe in the Trinity, was a big proponent of that side, died before he was able to give his side. And so he dies, and the pastor was just making fun of him and his side because of that. And it was like super weird and insulting of like, I was so early in Christianity, like the Trinity wasn't set. You can't just make fun of someone like that just because they believe different than you, like making fun of him dying. Like, and it just, that was the first flashback I got when I was listening to Jed talk about Gnosticism of like, first off, relating these two is not even the same. And second off, it just kind of like, just because people had different beliefs than you doesn't mean you can just like roast them or like that. Like, it's annoying.
So at this point, we get to Mr. D's perspective on this whole topic. Got Slofer down, got Jed down, on to Mr. D. So Luke Johnson asks Mr. D what he thinks about people that don't make this a big deal. Like people that think of gender identity and think like, oh, that's not a big deal. Let people be who they want, who they are. I not want to be. If I say want to be, they're going to hit on that. Let people be who they are. He asks, what about these people that don't think it's a big deal, that they should just be able to be who they are? And D's response is, quote, ultimately, that response is unloving, unquote.
I think that ultimately that response is unloving, quite honestly.
So what we're doing right here, Chris, ultimately, we are being unloving to trans people it's mostly just trans people that they talk about in this episode. So yeah, we're being unloving by disagreeing. This is where I see manipulation by these teachers. Kids that listen to these teachers, and these teachers make these things sound like, oh, it's obvious. Like, oh, like it's just, this idea is stupid. Like, how could you even think that, when they joke about it and make it to a point where it's like, this is unloving. You're being unloving if you don't do this. It's hard to disagree with teachers. And when you make it sound like such, just like a fact, like you were saying, I consider that indoctrination or manipulation of these children. So I was saying, to affirm people's identity is to be unloving, is what he's saying. And then he calls, he says that trans people are suffering from a delusion, and that's clearly what this is.
In no other sphere of life where somebody is suffering from a delusion, and that's clearly what this is. Do we lean into that and say, yes, you should do that? Nobody who is suffering from schizophrenia goes to, you know, a psychologist or a psychiatrist, and they're like, yeah, you know what, you do, you know, your hallucinations are real, and you should live that out. And they don't affirm that. They get help for the person.
using terminology like clearly again is just like this. You're trying to make something be dumbed down so that people agree with you, especially when you're talking to an audience of students. Like when you use words like that, like that's clearly what this is, you're just disregarding any other thought. You are just shoving it out like it has no place there, in which he always was the one that said, don't listen to me, do your own research type thing. But if you come to the conclusion that you are, that is different than mine, then it has no place here, is how I see it. Well, he says it's a delusion. And I was going to say, like, tell that to the World Health Organization. They do not see it that way. He also compares it, gender dysphoria. He compares dysphoria to schizophrenia. He compares it later on to anorexia and compares it to bulimia. And it's just very ignorant to think that those are similar. Oh, he also compares it to identifying as a different age.
Your delusion is accurate and you should lean into this and do everything you can to do this. If I, you know, claimed, you know, that I was 65 years old and I should be collecting, you know, retirement benefits, the government wouldn't go for that.
Like, it's just, it's, are you not trying to understand where this person is coming from, or are you just trying to force your perspective onto other people? Because no other perspective can be right. I've already found the correct perspective. None of the other ones can be right. Like, he doesn't give anything else a chance. And I just think it's so rude to compare it to disorders such as schizophrenia or anorexia or bulimia. They're not the same thing.
This is the stuff that just, it hurt to listen to. Like, it was so ignorant and off-putting and insulting. And it, like, at this point, the first time I listened to it, I got about eight minutes in and had to stop. And then I made it to about 12 minutes in and had to stop. And then I got about 26 minutes in and just stopped for like a whole day of like, it hurts to listen to. It's not right. It's insulting. It's angering. It's frustrating. And really, like, it made me sad too. Of like, I'm just imagining they're so confident in their viewpoint about this, and so confident to not listen to the communities of the trans community, and honestly so many other communities. They don't listen to them and what they're saying. They don't listen to organizations like the World Health Organization. Later he talks about the APA, and they just don't listen to what scientists are saying, what studies are saying, what statistics are saying, and they're just so confident in themselves that they're clearly right. Using an adverb that he uses, clearly what it is, that they're suffering from a delusion. Like, that's so insulting to the people that have been trying to tell us how they feel for so long, and they're finally getting representation and protection and help. And then you just have people who study theology and have church adjacent degrees, who think that they know more than the World Health Organization or the APA or the hundreds of psychologists and psychiatrists and therapists and the community themselves who are telling you how they feel. And you just are so ignorant that you can't even listen and you can't even understand what they're going through. So I just wanted to talk about, so the Williams Institute, UCLA, does a survey every couple years on with people who I identify as trans. And it's specifically about unique risk factors and revolving around suicide. So if that hits very close to home to you, these numbers, I don't want to dehumanize people by bringing up too many statistics, but I think it's really important is like understanding what this attitude of this podcast brings to the table, what comes after. If this viewpoint becomes mainstream, if the parental rights Florida bill becomes law, like federal law, if stuff like this happens and the trans community loses a lot of their help that they have now, it gets worse. And I just wanted like really hit home of like what the science and statistics and studies are telling us and why we need to see that they are human and they are struggling. So I don't mean to diminish anyone into a statistic. I just want to keep saying that. So I don't, because I don't really want people to know that. So the Williams Institute writes that this is going to be just quoting straight up from their samples, and I'll leave the link in the description if you want to look into more of the study. So experiencing discrimination or mistreatment in education, employment, housing, healthcare, etc., leads to higher levels of suicide attempts. For example, the prevalence of past year suicide attempts by those who reported that they had been denied equal treatment in the past year because they are transgender was more than double that of those who had not experienced such treatment, 13.4% compared to 6.3%. I'm going to skip down here to respondents who had been rejected by their religious communities or had undergone conversion therapy were more likely to report suicide thoughts and attempts. For instance, 13.1% of those who had experienced religious rejection in the past year had attempted suicide in that past year. By contrast, 6.3% of respondents who had experienced religious acceptance in the past year attempted suicide in the past year. Those who had, quote, detransitioned at some point, meaning having gone back to living according to their sex assigned at birth, were significantly more likely to report suicide thoughts and attempts, both past year and lifetime, than those who had never detransitioned, in quotes. Nearly 12% of those who, quote, detransitioned attempted suicide in the past year, compared to 6.7% of those who have not, quote, detransitioned. Going down a little bit further, these are the factors that are associated with lower risk of suicide thoughts and attempts for the survey respondents. Respondents with supportive families reported lower prevalence of past year and lifetime suicide thoughts and attempts. Those who wanted and received hormone therapy and/or surgical care had a substantially lower prevalence of past year suicide thoughts and attempts than those who wanted hormone therapy and surgical care and did not receive them. A lower proportion of respondents who lived in a state with a gender identity non-discrimination statute reported past year suicide thoughts and attempts than those who lived in states without such a statute. So their conclusion comes to, end quoting, "It's clear that minority stress experiences such as family rejection, discrimination experiences, and lack of access to gender-affirming health care create added risk for transgender people. Furthermore, the cumulative effect of experiencing multiple minority stressors is associated with dramatically higher prevalence of suicidality." And I just wanted to bring that up and just point that this attitude that the hosts have in this episode is specifically called out in this survey respondent as leading to higher thoughts about suicide. So, like, it's important that we talk about what's wrong and why being non-affirming has very much issues and how much it affects. Like, the hosts don't have this attitude of how serious their topic is. They're making jokes, they're laughing, they're talking, and they just have this attitude of being clearly right about this when the statistics say the exact opposite.
So D says a lot of stuff that assumes he knows the absolute truth, including, like, he basically says anyone that, like, anyone who affirms people being trans, anyone who affirms their identity, that ideology, that belief that is right and okay, that flies in the face of all logic and truth. And I just think it's funny that he thinks that. Like, he must be pretty cynical towards just all of humanity in general. Like, this poor guy probably thinks he's one of the only people that is logical and can identify truth. Like, everyone that disagrees must just be so illogical and just can't discern what truth is. Like, if it's so clear, why doesn't everyone believe it? Like, if you think these things are just so clear and so concrete, I would just argue that you'd be wrong in that sense just because there is such controversy over it. Like, it's more complex than what he likes to make it out to be. He likes to make it seem so simple. Like, how can people get this wrong? Like, maybe you should think of it as more complex issue. But again, they seem to only talk about people who transition, who have reassignment surgery, like, just that specific area, when that doesn't, like, I think that involves all trans people. I don't think they understand that there are a variety of trans people and what they decide to do. But he goes on, he really believes that dysphoria is a mental disorder and even goes on to claim that the APA classifies gender dysphoria as a mental disorder, which is completely incorrect. He misrepresents the APA's position. The APA is the American Psychiatric Association, for those who don't know that. From one of their biggest publications that's used with psychiatrists is the DSM, or it's actually an abbreviation for Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders. And the most recent one is the fifth iteration of that. And within that manual, here is a quote. It says, quote, "It is important to note that gender nonconformity is not in itself a mental disorder. The critical element of gender dysphoria is the presence of clinically significant distress associated with the condition," unquote. They try to clearly say in there that it is not a mental disorder. It's just, and then on the APA's own website, they go in to talk. There's some good stuff just right at the beginning. Good for people like me who really don't understand it all that well. But it basically talks about gender dysphoria, referring to the psychological distress that results from incongruence between one's sex assigned at birth and one's gender identity. People who are transgender may pursue multiple domains of gender affirmation, including social affirmation, for example, changing one's name and pronouns. They may look for legal affirmation, which is changing gender markers on government-issued documents so that it is a legal affirmation of their gender. They may look for medical affirmation such as pubertal suppression or gender-affirming hormones and or surgical affirmation, which is what they like to focus on. So it says, of note, not all people who are transgender will desire all domains of gender affirmation, as these are highly personal and individual decisions. That just shows that there is a diversity within transgender people, I guess. That's why it's kind of hard just to use that term, because it does lump everyone together. It's hard to, like, we want to differentiate, but it's hard to, like, people within this domain are very different from each other. It's not like they're all the same person. And from there, Luke Johnson just comes in with homosexuality, like it has something to do with conversation. Like, he doesn't transition at all. He just jumps into homosexuality, in which, like we said before, these are very different topics. Even on that same APA website, they talk about gender identity being different from sexual orientation. People who are transgender have the same diversity of sexual orientations as people who are cisgender. I don't know why he thought, like, oh, let's jump into homosexuality, but now we're jumping into homosexuality, or they like to use SSA, same-sex attraction, I guess. Also, I think it's funny, Natalie pointed out, like, they use the term homosexuality all the time, and they never use the word gay. Like, they're scared of using the word gay. So, being trans has nothing to do with sexual orientation. That is a part of who the person is, their sexual orientation, but it doesn't have to do with them being trans.
The problem has shifted, and this is kind of harkening back to that podcast I referenced earlier with Carl Truman. Homosexuality has been around for a really long time, right? The Greeks did it. But for them, it was a behavior, not an identity. And so some people might say that that's wrong. Some people might say it's right. They're going to do what they're going to do. But they didn't associate a homosexual action with who they fundamentally were as a person. And, but that's where we're at now, is that my sexual orientation, my gender, my understanding of my personal gender or whatever, that has become who I am, an identity problem.
So he goes on to talk about homosexuality in the past and how it was just a behavior, is what he says, how people would have homosexual relations with each other, but it was just a behavior. It had nothing to do with who they are. They, like, he tried to say, like, they didn't make homosexuality a part of their identity. Like, he has a problem with people's sexual orientations being a part of who they are. Unless they're straight, then that's fine. Like, it's a sexual orientation. Like, are we still on this belief that, like, people choose their sexual orientation? Like, are we still saying that? Like, it's just, it is a part of who they are. Did they get to choose it? Not that I know of. I was going to say, like, in the past, so he says it was just a behavior. I don't know what research he uses to come to that conclusion. I don't know where he's getting that from, But like, what if we just considered that maybe it was a part of those people's identity in the past? Like maybe that was a part of who they were, but it was dangerous for that to be known in a patriarchal context. So they just put off being just like, hey, this is just a behavior. Or maybe they just didn't take sex as seriously as the church does or has in recent history. Maybe it wasn't tied to who they were because it was just sexuality. Maybe they just didn't care about sexuality, but we make it a really big deal today. I don't know. Like, there's a whole lot of options that could be for his claim, but I wouldn't know. He didn't cite anything or source it, so I couldn't tell you. Do they believe that being gay is a mental disorder as well? Do they think same-sex attraction is a mental disorder? I think they do. I don't think they don't say it because they don't believe it is. I think they just don't say it so they don't get backlash.
Well, I think that's true. And the church likes to have its own, almost a secret code for itself, where it uses terms and words that mean the same thing as what everyone else uses, but they say it different to try to get away from backlash. I think that they would say it is, if someone has, in quotes, I'm going to use their language, same-sex attraction, they use that term that way instead of saying gay or they're attracted to the same sex. They use SSA as an abbreviation because that's the term they use, and so that they can kind of use their own thoughts and processes and say that, like, it's a sin that God has bestowed on this person to be attracted to the same sex. I remember Slofer talking about this in our UTT class. That was the first year he was teaching at Lakewood, and I remember him specifically talking about this and using terminology like that. I can't say that he still uses it that way. He doesn't talk super a lot about it in this episode, so I don't want to like assume that he still thinks that way. I just remember in class he had one of his friends is a pastor who described himself as suffering with same-sex attraction, and described himself as it being a sin that he suffered through. It was a trial that he had to work through, and he met his wife and was attracted to her, and they had kids together as a way to say that, like, you don't have to struggle with this forever. Me looking back at that now, I would say that, well, and he also said that when he watched TV or video or something, he still had that, not lust, but attraction, and he thought men that still looked nice. What I know today, I would say that the way they use the language was just tiptoeing around him saying that he was bi and not gay. I don't want to give a term for him, obviously, but the way the story reads to me now, looking back, is it was being used to project this way of saying same-sex attraction isn't something that happens to you all the time. You can work through it. It's a sin that is, or not a sin, it's a sin and a thorn in your side, kind of going back to the whole thing with Paul, that God gives you to struggle with so you can become better. That's kind of the language I remember them using in class. And so they use someone that had found a partner that was a woman and they had kids together as a way to diminish people who are in relationships with the same sex. I just very clearly remember that, and it still is. I wish I could. I would love to find that person that had talked to us in class about this. So I want to talk to him more about it. Yeah. Now that I would like to hear more of his story. It would be interesting to hear. There's a YouTube channel, God is Gray. She did some interviews and stuff with people who are kind of similar, but I just have a very distinct memory with this person. So I would be curious to talk like one-on-one about it.
Yeah. So at this point, we get into a bit of a... I want to tread carefully because I don't want to say anything wrong with Jed or anything like that. Jed does, in the episode, come out and saying that he did struggle with dysphoria while he was going through school. And kind of his whole experience, which, like, he doesn't seem to think it was, like, such a bad thing to be at Lakewood. I think he gives Lakewood too much credit in his explanation of going through school at Lakewood. But he went the whole time and didn't say anything about his dysphoria in school. but he talked about his internal struggle and the questions he would ask himself, like, how would this make me a better person? How would this improve my life? And he doesn't really get too specific about what this is. Like, he uses terminology like, if you do what you want to do, I don't know what he's talking about. Like, do what you want to do. Is that like the, like, transitioning? I don't want to read too much into it, but he was saying, if you do what you want to do, like, it may not be good for you. How would it make you a better person? And he basically was like, the life I have is good. I'm going to keep the life that I have. And I took that as more of like what settling is. Like, life is good enough the way it is. I don't want to disrupt that. I'm going to settle for what I have right now. Now, that may be a bad interpretation. He could be very happy with his decisions, and I would be happy with that as well. But not everyone could be happy with staying, like, sticking with the dysphoria just because your life is good enough and you don't want to ruin it. Like, I would say the problem there is that it would get ruined at all if you were to say anything. And that's what I think Lakewood was doing, was making it scary to say anything, because you think your life's going to change completely if you just tell people about this part of you. So, like, yeah, it sounds like he didn't say anything because there may be backlash if he were to express himself that way. So the lesson I got was, don't do it. But later on, they do say do, and I'll get into that. But he's basically, I heard, like, the life and the body you have right now can be good, is what I heard him use, was the word can. And so I was thinking, well, if it can be good, it can be bad too. It is individual. I don't think it goes across the board. But it's good to hear his account of it. I was also really upset when Slofer said something about, like, recognizing that in his senior year, like, pointing that out. I felt very uneasy with him saying that. Did you get the same feeling?
Yeah, it didn't feel good.
When Slofer's like, yeah, I noticed that about you your senior year. It's like, what are you trying to do here? Like, what are you trying to prove?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Well, I don't know why he said it.
Anyways, after Jed talks about that and kind of talks about his own journey with that, Luke Johnson comes in, and this is my own summary of what he said. So Luke Johnson comes in and he basically goes, okay, Jed, now you are our personal representative for everyone who has dysphoria. Please tell us how to make everyone better. Like, that's that's not a direct quote, but that's what I heard when he was like, Jed, like, how can you help people that are dealing with this since you experienced it yourself? He's like purposefully making Jed a representative for everyone who has dysphoria and what to do to basically cope with it. I don't like the turning him into a representative. I don't know if he would want to be that representative, but he takes it on anyways, and he tries to give some advice to any other students that are dealing with the same thing. And he uses phrases such as, like, living the life God is calling you to, and how Lakewood helped him live life how God was calling him to live his life. And so I thought it was funny. I just feel like he gives Lakewood too much credit. He's too in it. But my experience with Lakewood was not with Lakewood helping me to go where God was calling me. Lakewood told me where to go. They had their own idea of where God calls everyone and told me to go in that direction. Basically, like, God's calling you this way. You need to go that way. That's the way God's calling you. They didn't help me. They just told me where to go. And he defends Lakewood, and I just think just because Lakewood doesn't have the intention of kids feeling scared of talking, and like, just because they have that intention of, okay, let me start that over. I don't think I wrote it out well. Just because Lakewood doesn't have the intention of causing kids to feel scared about talking about these things does not make it okay. Intention doesn't make the impact okay. Causing kids to feel scared of talking about these things is not okay. Intention does not matter. They need to be aware of the impact of their actions and not just hope that it works out because they want it to. You wanting it to work out in a certain way just because you want it to be good doesn't make it good. Your intention does not matter as much as the impact that it causes. And we can see that the impact is that kids do not feel safe to talk. And I don't blame them. So Jed goes into calling for kids to feel safe to tell someone, to feel safe to bring it up. But I still would not say that you're safe to bring those things up. They want you to bring it up so that they can be there to, quote, help, quote, unquote, you. They want to help you, or should I say save you, like you are a victim of something. It is very manipulative. It's like, you should feel safe, but we want you to change. We want to change this part of you. So tell us about that part so we know that we have to change that in you. And then they jokingly associate the consequences of, I just put coming out. I feel like coming out kind of encompasses everything. It might not. I might be wrong with this, but I'm just saying coming out is telling people about like whether your gender identity, sexual orientation, anything like that. So they jokingly associate the consequences of coming out as being locked in tunnels, sent to hell, failing Bible class, like all in a joking manner.
Again, and this isn't just me saying, oh, don't worry, you know, you don't have anything to worry about as somebody who's going to clap the hammer on you. This is something that I experienced as a young person facing these issues. I felt these things. I came to people with them, and I was not sent straight to hell. I wasn't excommunicated from Lakewood Park.
You weren't put in the tunnels.
I wasn't put in the chained up. No, I didn't fail Bible class because of the fact.
Well, that's the tip of the cap to you, Nick.
Unintentionally, maybe intentionally, associating coming out with bad things happening and then being like, but that's not going to happen. But like, that's what everyone believes. And there's a reason for that. There's a reason that people have these ideas. It's not just coincidental that people think, oh, something's bad. Something bad's going to happen if I come out. Like, there's a reason for that. You should still be scared.
I don't know why he says this, because it's in the handbook that you can get expelled for like stuff like this, right? Like, they're a private institution, so they can have as many rules for expelling a student or suspending a student as they want. Like, there's punishment for this. That's why no one does it. And I feel like almost you gave them too much credit for not having this intention. My opinion would be that they do have the intention of scaring kids into making them what they want.
I don't know if I would go that far to say that's their intention.
Yeah, we'll have to agree to disagree on that.
They might see it as like utilitarian, like it's a necessary evil. Who knows? I don't know. They might see it as like, if I love this person, I will have to do this kind of thing, like a tough love almost.
Yeah, we'll have to. I'm sure later episodes we'll get into more of Lakewood's positions on things like this and their intention.
Anyways, after associating that, I just wanted to say that honestly, you shouldn't need to have to tell anyone anything or come out. That shouldn't be like something you have to do to be yourself, you know? Like, that's to say that like someone needs to tell you about it or come out to you. To suggest that is to basically say they need to admit, or I even heard them use the term confess, that you have a problem. Like, they're seeing it as like, by you telling us about this, you are confessing that you have a problem. Like, if you actually thought it would be safe to be yourself, you wouldn't have to tell anyone anything. But it's because there's an environment that you do not feel safe to be yourself, and you don't feel like you can tell anyone who you really are. And they're just saying, but you should feel safe to tell us, confess to us, is really what they're saying. It's not a problem. That's who you are is not a problem. It's just silly. Again, just giving Lakewood too much credit. I think Taylor was a good enough school. He should know better. You went to Taylor. I know some cool people that went to Taylor.
I don't actually know much about Taylor, but...
Oh, and then... I don't know it specifically. I just started responding to things and not writing down what they were saying. So at this point, they talked something about the church being interpreted as being hateful. And they're trying to show like, we're not hateful, we care type of deal.
Because I fear that all, you know, just like what, you know, people who experience same-sex attraction heard with the debate over gay marriage is, Christians hate homosexuals, you know, and I fear that this is the message that, you know, people who struggle with gender dysphoria are getting, is that Christians just hate people who are struggling in this way that are just different, you know? So that's, I think, the danger in all of the arguing and battling back and forth is the message that's portrayed.
Yeah.
I want to say the fact that people interpret the church's doings as being hateful should say something. The fact that that's a thing that people interpret it that way should say something. But no, it's everyone else's fault for misinterpreting them. If your impact doesn't match your intention, maybe try something else. Stop doing the same things over and over again, blaming everyone for misinterpreting you. Like, you're just putting the blame on everyone else because they don't understand me. Or should we just believe that there's a reason people see it as hateful? I think there's something in that.
Completely agree with that. Like, yeah, if everyone else says something's hateful and you're like, it's not hateful, all of you are wrong. That's a lot of people that have to be wrong.
Yeah, no, you're just misinterpreting me. I'm not being hateful. I'm being loving by harassing you at Planned Parenthood, or I don't know. Like, we don't need to get into that. That's not this episode. That's another one. We'll get there.
This episode has hurt so much, like, to listen to write, to do. Like, I'm in so much pain, and like listening to you talk for this past 45 minutes, I just want to cry. Like,
yeah, I'm almost done. There's just a little bit more. So they do start to discuss with each other how they would try to comfort someone that would come out and confess to them. Like, they talk about like doing it the right way, like listening to them, whatnot. Like, they're doing this whole act that they really just care. They care about you so much. And so they're like trying to figure out the best ways to converse about these things. And so they say, when it comes to somebody opening up and confessing struggles, again, that was their direct quote. They used the term confessing struggles. They consider this confession.
No, I'm not saying that that doesn't happen. We still have like a lot of opportunities where it does. But I do think, you know, to Jed's point as well, we also, when it comes to someone opening up and confessing struggles, a lot of times the church can be a really gracious and kind and loving place. I think the rub comes in just where you're saying, Nick, where how do we continue to show kindness to the person yet engage for truth and the argument because of the broader implications? And that's, I think that's just a difficult balance to have, to engage in the debate while also clearly conveying love for the person, and a love that wants to see wholeness and joy and peace, and no more of all of the struggles that come with kind of capitulating to, you know, the world's solution.
When it comes to somebody opening up and confessing struggles, like, they're basically wondering, how do we tell someone nicely that they are wrong so that they will agree with me? Like, they're talking, they're just figuring out, like, how do we talk to them so that they understand that what they're doing is wrong and they agree with my position and they change? They're not talking at all specifically about, like, how do we get to know this person? How do we try to understand them? It's no, how do we, in a nice way, tell them they need to change?
How do we tell them nicely that they need to repent from who they are?
They're more focused. Yeah, they're more focused on what you're doing wrong than who you are. They're more focused on trying to correct you. They're trying to fix you. They're more concerned with that than just you. That's why they're going on about how do we talk to these people? Like, how about you just talk to them like a person? I didn't think it was that hard to treat people as people. Okay, here's a direct quote. It's out of context at this point, but literally they use the phrase deliver you from whatever you're struggling with.
You know, the world's solution on what can deliver you from your, you know, whatever you're struggling with.
Like, what kind of savior complex do these people have? Like, they trying to, quote, deliver people from what they're struggling with. And then Slofer goes on to generalize being LGBTQ+ as people who have sexual sin. So he tries to generalize, like, hey, we're all in this together. We all have our own sexual sin.
We're all in the same boat when it comes to, you know, dealing with sexual sins and temptations. And
that's just a part of this group of people that have sexual sin. Like, stop.
If I step out and cheat on my wife with this person, you know, everything you were just saying, like, all those desires and temptations could be there in that but in that context and situation, you know, my life is going to change, you know, after, and what I have now is good. And, you know, so as you were saying that, it was like, wow, that could go for other areas too, other sins. And
he associates it with cheating on one's wife. He considers being gay or trans or just queer in general as similar to someone who cheats on their wife.
Or like, not even that, being asexual or like any of the other things, really.
It lumps it all as sexual sin. All of it.
It lumps it all of it together.
It's stupid. It bothered me a lot. That's where I left off. I just gave up. It was getting to like just little one sentence bits or just like phrases. I was like, I'm done. I'm sick of it.
Yeah. Yeah, so that part happens at about 40 minutes in. And so this episode is 50 minutes long. They pretty much end the conversation there. That conversation. They mention they didn't have a plan. Again, obviously, they didn't have a plan. My God, didn't have a plan at all. And then they mention an article. There was a guy in Germany who got 90 COVID vaccines and then all of the extra cards he sold. So they were legitimate batch numbers. He sold them off. They make jokes about this. I mean, it's don't get 90 COVID vaccines. Like, testament to how safe these mRNA vaccines are that's like he's not dead. But don't do that. Obviously not good. No need for that also. And then selling these cards was not a good choice as well. Whatever. But the thing that got me just really quickly, it doesn't relate to anything else, but I'm just mad. The thing that got me the most about this was the language they use about the vaccine. They didn't outright say it was bad or anything like that. They just made jokes using far-right conspiracy language about microchips, saying stuff about being magnetic, magneto stuff. So they say things, far-right conspiracy theories like this: you might die in 30 years, you might not. They call it the Fauci ouchie microchip, being magnetic like Magneto, just conspiratorial jokes and things that they start saying as a joke. I think the problem is it comes off kind of like a joke, but at the same time, I've heard these things from actual other people not joking. And the position of power that the hosts are in over their listeners, it's just a worrying trend to have, to being so casual about COVID in general, and being so casual about vaccinations in a time where it's very important to get vaccinated to protect yourself and things like that. I didn't really like that. And I thought it was weird that they even talked about it, but that's just what the last was. So you didn't miss anything at the end there.
Yeah.
It was just like, okay, that don't say things like that to children.
Yeah, it's fine. Because I also think most of the people listening would be like high schoolers. So give them some credit there. They should be old enough to understand certain things.
Yeah, I mean, but it's just it's the position of power that teachers have in high schoolers' lives. I mean, maybe it's just a me thing. I just remember really looking up to my teachers and taking everything they said as more factual than anything else. Not saying that everything they said I took as fact, but I was more inclined to believe things that they said versus other people in my life, just because I'm around them so much and they teach me actual information. So sometimes it's hard to parse through, and you know, you're high school, so you're busy, you know, so it's hard to parse through everything someone tells you, so sometimes you just repeat things.
Yeah, that's what college is for, because you know, statistically there's a bunch of kids that don't go back to church after they go to college.
Yeah, I wonder why that happens. So odd. Kind of a crisis. They should figure that out.
I don't know. I would have been more likely to have like stayed within that world if they would have introduced me to just more concepts and ideas and perspectives, but they didn't. And so I got those at school. To close us out here, again, I just want to apologize for anything that we may have misinterpreted or misrepresented in this episode. Again, like Chris said, please reach out, inform us. We would love to learn more from other people. We'd love to hear the different perspectives and just learn more, because honestly, I'm just an ignorant person as well. So apologies for any misrepresentations. Please let us know how we can make it better.
And I just want to say again, I'm sorry for statistics. I know statistics take groups of people and lump them together, and that's problematic when you're talking about individuals. I really just was focusing on specific things to show how dangerous language like this is. And I do want to reach out to the hosts of Hallway Digressions as well. We want this to be almost an accountability and a conversation. We want to bring up problematic points and topics and things that we find are issues. We want to talk about them. We want to help and bring them to the host's attention. And just really, we don't want this to be an attack. We're not trying to make this an attack. We want this to be like a line of open communication and just to explain why things on the podcast are problematic and why that they have issues, and hopefully explain a different perspective about things as well.